and welcome to Citizen 411, your information directory for democracy, where we seek to ensure that everyone is represented and empowered in our democratic republic. Our guest this week is Clark County Auditor Greg Kimsey, and we here at the League are a real fan of him. He's funny and he's nice, and which is really special when you're working with someone who's working with elections. Now, we don't want to speak for the League itself, but we do support the League's mission to ensure that everyone is represented. The most important thing to know about the League and this show is we're nonpartisan. We never endorse nor recommend candidates or parties. The views expressed by guests are their own, and their appearance does not imply an endorsement of them. So who are we? We are Teresa Torres and Tracy Riley Kelly, and this is Citizen 411.
The subject today is free and fair elections, and this is really the cornerstone of our work at the League and really the cornerstone of democracy. But before we talk to Greg Kimsey, Teresa, I want to have a little bit of fun here now. I want to start a new monthly feature, and we're going to call this the Citizen 411 Wayback Machine Trivia Game. Now, to start off this trivia, by the way, Teresa, are you old and ancient enough that you would know why I called this the Wayback Machine?
I'm afraid I am. I think I remember it had something to do with Mr. Peabody and Sherman. Sherman was the nerd, and Mr. Peabody, who was a little dog, as I recall, was the inventor. And what show was that on, anyway?
Oh, Teresa was on Rocky and Bullwinkle, which I personally never missed. Do you remember that the other phrase in there was fan mail from some flounder? And there was Natasha and Boris? Boris and Natasha.
No, my favorite part was Sherman and Mr. Peabody.
Oh, okay. Well, I just like, I wonder if our guest, do you remember the way that's machine? Oh, he's just a boy. He doesn't know these things. Okay. Well, first question, do you know what the Wayback Machine was?
I think it took you back in time, as I recall. You got to observe famous events.
Yes, it was always a very, very important event. Buzzer, you got that correct. All right, so let's fire up the Wayback Machine. Kind of a grandfather to Marty McPhee in the movie Back to the Future, you know? Okay, so trivia question. Radioland, this is for you. There was a Voting Rights Act, which was not passed in this last election, and there was a sponsor of that, and it was one of the greatest Democratic citizens that we know, actually somebody who was brutally assaulted at the Edmund Pettus Bridge at the beginning of the Selma to Montgomery. Radioland audience, do you know who this amazing defender of democracy was? Doot.
Am I answering for them?
Doot. Okay, Radioland. Well, how about you, Teresa? Do you know the answer?
I do happen to know. It's John Lewis.
Oh.
Who just died this past year.
Oh, yeah. What a man. Well, that's really something when we're talking about democracy, isn't it? Hey, Greg.
Hi, Tracy.
All right. Hi, Greg. All right. Well, you know, I have to make this really hard because Greg knows everything about elections. Of course he does, doesn't he? Well, Greg, we're the League of Women Voters, remember? Even though we let men in. And we should let you in. You should be, you know, you could be a member of that. The mayor is. Mayor Ann is. Did you know that?
Of course she is.
Yeah, well, I think you should be a member also. Okay, so what year and what was her name did the first woman run for president of the United States?
Oh, I want the John Lewis question.
Oh, you knew that one. Well, we wanted a little harder one for
you. I actually
had
the great honor of meeting Congressman Lewis Martin Luther King celebration here. 4 or 5 years ago.
Oh, wow.
It was remarkable.
Wow. Okay, well, you're trying to dodge that question, even though you had a good answer. Do you know who this woman was?
Was it Congresswoman Chisholm?
Well, no, it wasn't, because you haven't taken the Wayback Machine far enough. Shirley Chisholm, by the way, did run for president. And remember, she said, if you don't give us a seat, bring a folding chair. That was her great good advice. Yeah, we like that. She was a member of the League of Women Voters. Well, the answer is Victoria Clafton Woodhull in 1872. She was quite a dame, by
good
the way.
Her.
Well, it turns out that Greg doesn't know everything about elections.
That's a true statement.
But I think maybe he knows enough to have a really good story. So, audience, on to our guest. Greg Kimsey was born and raised in Vancouver, and he currently resides in Hazeldale with his wife, Gail. He graduated from UW with a bachelor's degree in administration, and again, I got his master's in administration from Portland State. He has been honored in the past as the Secretary of State's County Auditor of the Year. And Greg, you're for the League of Women Voters. You are the County Auditor of our century. So,
I hope Liz isn't listening.
Oh, that's right. And she's probably in the league.
So, Greg, welcome. You were just reelected by a very comfortable margin, 66%. Congratulations. So we at the league felt that democracy won this time. We've heard that phrase. What do you think?
I would just say that I was very pleased with this election, that across our country and across our state with a couple of very noteworthy but relatively minor exceptions, people who promulgated, put forth the false statement that the 2020 election of Donald Trump was false, that people who put forth that lie were not successful in their bid to become mm-hmm. elected officials involved in the administration of elections. Do want to make note of the one exception here in the state of Washington, in Mason County, a very, very capable county auditor, Patty McGuire, was defeated by mm-hmm. a person who was fully invested in that falsehood.
That's too bad. Yeah. Well, speaking of auditors, I myself didn't know this until recently, what all auditors do. So what do you do? Because, you know, elections are only every few months. What are you doing in between time?
Well, elections are only every few months, but it's constantly busy. You know, we just finished up the two recounts from the general election. Right. And before those recounts were completed, you know, we were working for this February election, getting that done. Ballots are mailed to military and overseas voters on, I believe it's January 18th. So it's coming right up. But thank you for the question. That is the most common question I've received in my entire time of office. And it's a question I asked when I first thought about running for office. Yeah. Wonder what the county auditor does. So the county auditor is the primary financial officer of county government, keeps track of where about $700 million comes from, and then how that $700 million is spent, reports on the financial operations, financial transactions, and financial condition to the public. We also ensure that the public's assets are safeguarded by ensuring that the proper internal controls are in place and monitored by management. We conduct performance audits to assist county managers in carrying out their responsibilities in a more effective and efficient manner. And then and the financial services is actually the largest part of the auditor's office. We have 22 people in the financial services area out of the 44 of the entire office. And then also financial services, big function is making sure that those 1,700 employees get paid every 2 weeks. And with 18 labor contracts, that is a surprisingly complex process, the payroll. And of course, laws change all the time. Then we record legal documents and issue marriage licenses as part of our very proud. We have a cooperative agreement with the county assessor and the county treasurer where we conduct what we call the joint lobby, kind of one-stop shopping where you can come in and complete transaction with one clerk instead of having to go to separate offices. And then I also serve as the agent for the Department of Licensing for motor vehicle and vessel licensing and titling. And in that capacity, we have oversight responsibility of the 9 private licensing offices here in the county. And then the area, of course, that the public is most aware of, has the greatest level of public interest, we register people to vote and we conduct all public elections in the county. It's a 4-year office.
Yeah.
As a result of the county becoming a charter county and the voters amending our charter recently to make the offices nonpartisan, it's now a nonpartisan office, which I'm very pleased about.
Thank you. Sounds to me like it's a lot of math, which is
a lot of numbers. A lot of numbers.
Well, we like numbers at the league also. And according to the Washington Secretary of State, 64% of the voters in Clark County cast their votes in the November election. Is that something you're pleased with?
You know, 64% is a pretty good turnout for a midterm election like that. We had 69% in the last midterm election. But then 4 years earlier, I think turnout was only 55%. Mm-hmm. So, but 64% is a pretty reasonable turnout. Of course, we'd like to see even greater turnout. I would also, I guess, note, though, that with, you know, so turnout is a function of not just people who cast a ballot, but also the number of people who are registered to vote. We've had a pretty large increase in the number of people who are registered to vote. Over the past 4 years, where I think we're at 327,000 or something like that, registered voters.
Out of how many?
Well, in the entire county, we've got, I think it's about 505,000, a population of 505,000. Mm-hmm. So that includes, you know, people who are not eligible to register to vote, people who are under 18 years of age, mm-hmm. people who are not citizens. So, you know, 327,000 out of 505,000, that's a lot of people who are registered to vote.
So that's math again. I don't know what the percentage of that is. Yeah.
It's a lot.
Yeah. So here in Washington, we really love our vote by mail. Why don't other states do this?
Well, as you said at the beginning of the show, we're a Democratic Republic. We have 50 states. And each state gets to control, determine how that their elections are conducted. I will offer up kind of a point of view that you may not have considered, which is that if we had state or federal control of elections, I think it's very doubtful we'd be entirely vote by mail. Mm. If you think about the likelihood of the federal government enacting legislation that allowed people to require every ballot to be mailed to every registered voter in the mail, that was a pretty big change back when that happened in Oregon and then Washington. So, you know, I guess old habits die hard, and you are seeing increasing numbers of people vote by mail in states like Colorado and California. Of course, in 2020, you saw a lot of people vote by mail in the pandemic.
Right.
So I think it is it will be a continuing, an increasing part of the elections process across the country. But it's slow going. There's a lot of people who do not want to make that change.
So let's talk about barriers to voting. One thing is, why do we vote on Tuesdays? Why not on Sunday?
Well, thank you for the question. I have never really thought about that. So when I saw your question, I had to actually Google it and find the answer to that. And apparently, at least Mrs. Google says the answer is. You know, we were almost exclusively an agrarian society when we start first having elections. Mm-hmm. And so, and a very much of a church-going society. And so people went to church on Sundays. So you weren't going to have elections on Sundays. And then you needed a full day to travel. Right. And I guess Wednesdays were typically a marketplace for farmers. And so it just worked out. Tuesday was the best day for people to kind of get white men of property.
Right.
To cast their ballot. And so that tradition of Tuesdays just carries forward.
And we're very slow to change sometimes. All right. We are here with Greg Kimsey, Clark County Auditor. When we come back from the break, we'll dive deeper into the election of 2022 and talk more about Greg's impressions about the future of elections. You're listening to Citizen 411.
A big thank you to our founding partners at Morrell Inc. Print and Marketing for their ongoing support of community radio. Morrell Inc. is a woman-owned, union-staffed, state-of-the-art print shop that since 1993 has offered high-quality, creative, and innovative printing and marketing solutions. Morrell Inc.'s experienced staff creates partnerships with their clients and uses the latest technologies to meet their needs. More information about Morrell Inc.'s products, printing, and marketing strategies that will best serve your next project and budget can be found at morrellinc.com. That's morrellinc.com.
Have you always wanted to buy a washing machine and support affordable housing at the same time? Well, now you can at the Clark County Habitat for Humanity store. They have furniture, appliances, building materials, rugs, paint, flooring, tile, and tons of other new and gently used items. Every purchase supports home building projects right here in Clark County. You can donate your own things too. Or better yet, you can call 360-213-1313. That's 360-213-1313. And they'll come pick them up from your home. The Clark County Habitat for Humanity store is located on Southeast 2nd Street near the corner of Mill Plain and I-205. They have everything and the kitchen sink.
Welcome back to Citizen 411, your directory for democracy. And we're your hosts, Tracy Riley Kelly and Teresa Torres. Joining us today is Clark County Auditor Greg Kimsey. Well, you know, Greg, the other thing that Clark County voters love is the Dropbox. And again, we league people look these things up, and we see that 61% of our locals use the Dropbox. You know, because you really feel it's safe. I think, you know, that I do that. You know, I go there, and I put it in there. I like that. I also know you happen to have a story about just how indestructible these local boxes are. So tell me, how many of them have we got? And tell us a story about just how strong they are.
Well, we have 21 permanent ballot drop boxes located throughout the county. Those are available to voters beginning when ballots are mailed to voters 18 days before each election. They're available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And you're right, their voters really like them, and they are, and with good reason. They're very secure. They're very accessible. And while the post office does a remarkably good job, I personally would recommend people to use the ballot drop box instead of the Postal Service. Again, Postal Service does a really good job, but remarkably, again, every election we receive some ballots that are properly postmarked weeks after election, after certification election. And those ballots can't be counted because they're received after certification. Again, as you said, the ballot drop boxes are very, very stout. We've had up in Richfield, we had a ballot drop box in a roundabout, kind of a circular roundabout. And on two different occasions, a semi-truck hit this thing and did more damage to the semi-truck than it did the ballot drop box. These things are really strong.
Okay, well, I want to jump into what was really important to many of us in this last election, and that was the 3rd congressional district between Joe Camp and Marie Gluzenkamp Perez. And there was another, so there was a recount that was asked for this one. And also in the Sue Marshall and Don Benton for the District 5 counselor race. So I heard that there were these recounts. The other question I asked is, we're thinking about manual count? Like, why in this age would anybody like take them out and recount? So would you talk to us, tell us a little about this recount?
Well, first, it's a little factoid. I've done this almost 24 years now. We've never had a requested recount in 24 years. And I think I'm quite confident at least 10 years part of my coming on the scene, we had not had a requested recount. This year, as you noted, we had two requested recounts. One was a partial manual recount of 12 districts by Don Benton of the County Council District 5 race. And then, again, as you noted, the machine recount of the entire 3rd Congressional District by Joe Kent. The manual recount is actually the best test of the integrity and the accuracy of the voting system. Because what you're doing is humans are looking intently at each ballot and looking intently at that individual race on each ballot and then comparing the results on each of those ballots to the results from the machine. So it's that comparison is really where that that accuracy comes from. And we will find in every recount, we'll find that humans made mistakes. Either voters don't properly mark the ballot or mark the response position correctly. You know, they use a very light pencil mark or, you know, maybe a fluorescent mark or something. And then our inspection boards, or humans on the inspection boards will miss some of those light marks as well. And so in the manual recount, when, again, humans are looking very intently at each ballot and in that specific race on that ballot, they'll find those mistakes. And that's why we will typically add a few votes in a recount. And in the, we'll say out of the 207,000 ballots that were recounted in the third congressional district race. I think we added seven and three votes in the third congressional district race. So no, it was nine. Yeah, you're right. Nine ballots out of 207,000. It's pretty accurate.
Could I interject a question? So was that only here in Clark County that he requested the recount? Because the district covers more than Clark County.
No, he actually, unlike the county council district where Don Benton only requested a partial recount of only 12 precincts, Joe Kent requested a recount of the entire congressional district.
So that money that he paid, the $48,000, was that just for the Clark County vote?
No, district-wide.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, I heard a new phrase which was not familiar to me, so I'd like you to talk about it, curing the vote. So there's a whole thing about this, and I think this is involved in signatures. Or what is this curing the vote, Dirk?
Yeah, actually, I think, Tracy, most people have heard that as curing signatures, not curing the ballot or curing the vote. Because what happens is, as you know, the primary security feature in the vote-by-mail system is the verification of the voter's signature on their affidavit envelope, the comparison of the signature on the affidavit envelope to the signature in the voter's registration record. And if we determine the signature is not a match, the ballot is then set aside. It's what we call challenged. It's set aside. The voter is contacted, and if they give us their phone number on that ballot, on the affidavit envelope, we will call them. And if they do that, that phone number is confidential information, is not public information. We don't share the phone number with anyone, but we will use that phone number to call the voter and tell them their ballot has been challenged because of a signature mismatch, and we'll give them an opportunity to cure that signature issue. And so, actually, since 2004, in the Dino Rossi, Christine Gregoire governor's race, which some of you and your listeners might recall, this chasing after signatures and curing signatures became part of the action after election day action by campaigns in very close races.
So how do they know who these people are?
Well, one of the defining features of elections in our country is that everything is public information with one big exception. No one knows how you voted, but whether or not you did vote is public information. But how you voted is very, very confidential. It's established early in the process. No one knows how you voted, but it is public information as to whether or not you voted. And the status of your ballot, whether it's been challenged or accepted, is also public information.
I'm going to interject another question. So, Nervous Nelly here, if I wanted to really make sure that my ballot had been accepted, would you talk about that process, I can do?
Thank you so much for that question. I would really hope that if there's one thing listeners get from today's conversation, it's the ability to check that exact status of your ballot by going online at votewa.gov. Votewa.gov has a lot of good information for voters. It will tell you, show you your current registration status, your current address, and then it will show you when your ballot was mailed to you, when it was received back in the elections office, and then whether it was accepted for processing or if it was challenged. So votewa.gov. You can always call us or send us an email too, but votewa.gov is a really good way to get that information.
You know, I love VoteWa, and I always check. I see, when my ballot was received and everything, VoteWa.gov.
Was that VoteWa.gov, Tracy?
Yeah. and the League of Women Voters has its own version because not every state has a VoteWa. They're not as good in many states. And so we have something kind of similar, and we call that Vote 411, which is, I think we got our name of our, yes, clever name of our thing going on in there about that. Well, so redistricting happened this year. And I wonder, how did that affect local races? And do you think that the redistricting challenge, that they had of how to make contiguous and, the kind of stuff, the words they use for that, how did that go for you, do you believe?
Redistricting is, I think our state has a better system than many states, but it's you know, it is a political process. You know, Supreme Court is looking at that right now. The United States Supreme Court is looking again at to what extent states have control of that, and to what extent, or more specifically, what extent legislators have control of that, and what extent judges and judicial system can inject themselves into that redistricting process. We have a panel consisting of representatives of each political parties make recommendations to the legislature. The legislature typically only makes very minor kind of cleanup changes in what the state redistricting committee comes up with. So our system works pretty good. Understand there's software out there that you can use that does, you know, a really good job of creating competitive districts, communities of interest, tight boundaries, but I don't think we're going to see software being used in Washington State anytime soon for redistricting purposes.
So we have time for one last question, probably not a fair one right here at the end, but ranked choice voting was on the ballot. What do you think of that? How would that work?
I was surprised it failed. Really? It has, yeah, I was. It has a lot of momentum across the country. You know, we see Maine and Alaska. Now it's Nevada that just passed. Mm. It passed in the city of Portland. It was approved in the city of Seattle. And there's a lot of places in the country that are using ranked choice voting. It has, in my view, I didn't take a public position on it one way or another, but it has some, of course, has some pros and cons. The pro, I think one of the big pros is it definitely eliminates the kind of spoiler candidate effect. And I can pull up, you know, Al Gore and Ralph Nader in 2000. I can pull up Dino Rossi in 2004, a Libertarian candidate, took away about 30,000 votes, you know, arguably from Dino Rossi. So that spoiler candidate is something I think is a really clear advantage of ranked choice voting. I think a disadvantage of ranked choice voting is you can look at this year's election where we had 13 candidates for U.S. Senator in the August primary. And so if you had 13 candidates under ranked choice voting going to the general election, it's hard for voters and the media to focus in on any of those 13.
Right.
So I actually like the Alaska model where it's top four primary and then ranked choice voting in the general election. If you're going to have ranked choice voting, that's the system I think I prefer.
Well, I just am going to have to finish our wonderful talk with you, which is so interesting, Greg. The topic has been the election and our guest's perception. Greg Kimsey, Clark County Auditor, thanks so much for being on this program today. And you're our hero at the League of Women Voters about just exactly what it's like to be an active and involved citizen and to help other citizens. Just can't say enough. We want to tell you all that this is Citizen 411, your information directory for democracy, where we seek to ensure that everyone is represented and empowered in our democratic republic. To see and hear more about today's program and what we're up to, join the conversation on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at KXRW Vancouver. Signing off.